his parents.
So Prabhupada says there was no parent.
Yeah, he just mentioned it. You can't figure out why Prabhupada said that, unless you understand that it's Prabhupada story in India, so he doesn't want to rest the world. Really, to give you any kind of Prabhupada said there was no parent in the tree. That's what he said, there was no parent. So he's kind of displaying that story of how he
comes like
is
that. Yeah. Could you hear? So Janamish Guru was mentioning that there's a popular story in India that when Shiva was, he was speaking Bhagavatam to Devi, and because he was in trance when he's speaking it, he said, "I'll have my eyes closed, so you keep saying, so that I know you're awake, and then I'll keep speaking." So as time went, then as he's explaining it, then Devi's listening, and also this parrot is listening. And Devi fell asleep, so then the parrot kept saying, like this. So then he spoke so much, and then when he finished speaking, then he opened his eyes, found Devi was asleep, and the parrot was, you know, going, So Shiva got upset and wanted to kill him, so then it must be Tamasic piranhas. And so then he would think, you know, here's a nice devotee. So then he flew into the mouth of Vyasadeva's wife and took shelter there, you know, and so became Sukadeva Goswami. And so Janananda's Guru says that in the Bhagavatam, when it's describing how Lord Shiva is describing the glories of the Lord to Devi, then in a purport, for no seeming reason, Prabhupada says there was no parrot in the tree. So he's disclaiming this story for that. We have any other reference? I don't know. You'd have to look in Radha Krishna Dana Deshtipika. They might say, but I don't think it goes down into the parents. It might. Yeah, so unless the acharyas reveal in that. We've heard that, I'm not sure of the sources, so I wouldn't want to speak them. But the point is that Sukadeva means parrots speak, so it's like that's their thing. So it could be, it doesn't have to be.
If
he is the ashraya, but everybody's ashraya of Krishna. Balaram is also ashraya. You know what I'm saying? means to Krishna, everybody, he is the Vishaya. Everybody else relates to him as Ashraya. And so Balaram's quiet, so it's not necessarily that. It's taking the mood. Krishna turns golden because he takes on the mood of Srimati Radharani. He takes on that mood, so sad. But you can, does that make sense? So it's not necessarily that, because it's also, it's two things are there. And this is one thing that debunks the peacock thing, is that a girl, she doesn't feel any less the girlfriend if she's wearing the boyfriend's coat. In fact, the coat will remind her more. You know, so therefore, the peacock feather being Krishna's, if Lord Krishna's taking Radharani's position, a peacock feather wouldn't disturb the meditation. Because the peacock feather is Krishna's, and so the natural thing of girls, they like to get as physically as close as possible. So a peacock feather that is Krishna's, if it's on the body, then will not distract from meditation. A girl doesn't think when she puts on the boy's coat that now I'm the boy. No, that's not, it's not a good argument. Okay? Yes, sir.
Is that considered Sarupya?
Sarupya. Yeah, might have that. It's, Janana's guru is making it's one kind of liberation of Sarupya, having the same form. So generally we see it in connection to Vaikuntha, because there's generally a desire for a spiritual perfection. So Sarupya is one of them. Like the Madhvas, their perfection is Sarupya, they take the same form. Like that. So this is, would be on the, you know, in the Goloka, what's his name? Uddhava. Looks exactly like Krishna. It means you can tell by mood and this and that it's not. It's a devotee, not Krishna. But physically, you know, you can't tell the difference. Except for the Shivas. Yeah. The point is made is that devotees may not desire, but it may be given anyway. But it's only if it's valuable to the pastime, because it's always going to be there's something of interest if there's someone who's the same. But in general, it's different. You know, in Vaikuntha, basically everybody's looking the same, because the whole thing is that on reverence towards God. And so going, offering prayers, rendering service, you know, all that kind of surrender. So then, if everybody looks the same, it doesn't really matter. You know. But in Vrindavan, then it's more the variety. So, you know, you have you know, it's there, like Rangadevi and Sudevi. They're identical twins. So that has advantages in the pastimes in certain ways. Because that means one of them can be in two places at once for, you know, the pastimes. You know, because it's, you know, they'll think that she's here and she's there, so that way, you know, you can make nice arrangements. You see what I'm saying? But generally, everybody looks different.
So you were talking about the difference, the person who is not so maybe may think that so that he don't want to talk. And then when he starts speaking, he described very beautifully women, described very beautifully the kings, how much values are talking. Because all the adjectives, all the one, he glorifies so many different ways. So this not was like in different means in sense of evil or non so in relationship with all these other things. Can you please
something.
Because we become the devotees, no one will have relationship. It means that you were saying to be taught.
Yeah. Okay, question is on is that Sukadeva Goswami could describe all these different things in the material world of what's of value and what's appreciated. So then, two things. One is one would be just why that would be sometimes he is not, because then when he's preaching he would be a madhyama. He would take the role of a madhyama. So he discriminates. As an uttama he doesn't discriminate. Like that. So therefore that would be one of the reasons why you find one he's describing and getting into detail, and the other he doesn't care. On the indifference, then, indifference doesn't mean you can't see it. Indifference means you don't have any need for it. So that means you neither are for it or against it. Because karma, you're either for it or against it. You know, jnana, you're for it or against it. But bhakti on the material platform, you're neither for or against it. If you can be engaged in Krishna service, great. If you can't, then you're not. So for and against is, can it be engaged or can it not be engaged? But the thing itself is not the discussion. That's not the discussion. It means if you have so many knives, and there's a sharp knife and there's a blunt knife, then you take the sharp knife. But doesn't, so one could say, well, the sharp knife's better than the blunt knife, but the point is it's only better because it will do a better job of serving Krishna. But other than that, it doesn't really matter. So so then that's there. Because one has difficulty dealing with something that one's either attached or repulsed by. That's why it's said that a Brahmin should keep attachment and repulsion in, you know, balanced. Because otherwise you can't function with anything. If you're too attached, you can't deal with something properly. And if you're too repulsed, you can't deal. But if you're neutral, then you can deal with anything if it has some connection or value to the service. It doesn't matter. Does that make sense? Yeah. We have milk. So then some can't take the milk because of the injustices that are being done to the cows by the industrialists. So, okay, and then by not taking the milk, how does that further Krishna's mission? The milk refines develops the finer brain tissues by which it makes it easier to understand the fine points of Krishna and his philosophy. So therefore it's useful. So those cows going through so much austerity, there's a benefit. Suddenly becomes Krishna conscious. Those cows will get the same benefit. You drink the milk, you become Krishna conscious, they get the same benefit as you. You know, so the point is therefore then so many material conditionings actually get in the way. So seemingly good and bad gets in the way of devotional service. You know. Somebody can't eat this or eat that because of, oh, you'll get fat, or, you know, oh, it's carcinogenic, or, oh, it's, you know, they've read the sugar blues, or, you know, something like that. You know, they got an unlimited, you know, something to keep themselves busy. But that's not the thing, is engaging Krishna's service. You know, sugar's always been there. You know, it has been there, is there, but always will be there. If you don't like sugar, you're not going to like the spiritual realm. You know, especially not going to like, you know, Vrindavan Passage, Madhuram, you know, sweet, you know, so you got to travel. You know, you got to look for the... One should stick to the, the pastimes of Chernobyl. Actually, even that won't work, because that's the milk ocean, and it's the salt ocean. But then salt, too much sodium, you're on a low sodium diet. You got a problem. I don't know where the devotee could go that he'd be happy, you know. You know. So we have to always be very careful that our conditioned nature is used to advantage in Krishna consciousness. You know, and it doesn't become an obstacle like that. So it's the if one has an ability in these areas, okay, then one is conscious, then one should see what is actually the tradition, what's the culture, what actually is, because others may or may not know. We might become aware of something from the karmas, but it doesn't mean they have the complete picture. You know? It's always changing. Probably in 1955, before anybody even thought about vitamins and minerals, had already written an article on it. 1955. I read it once. I've heard that it's in the new folio and all those articles. that Prabhupada points out is that you take, he says, the particular body, if it's fed the particular food that it's supposed to eat, you know that it's God-given food, the body itself will produce its own, you know, own things. So, and he gives the example of the cow. You feed it dry straw that has no value to it, and the cow produces milk that's rich in all necessities. So that's probably just an example. Whatever it is, you take it, it'll break it down.
Rich of endurance.
So it works. So that's the point, is that if one has that, great, then use it, but then find out what is the tradition and actually know what is the whole thing, because the food is part of it, but the eating is also. And then why are you eating? For it's okay to do the service, but we also eat for social interaction. You know? That's also part of it. So do we know how to serve? Do we know how to eat properly in the company of devotees? Do we know what to talk about? Do we know what environment we would sit down and eat? You know, how we would dress, or what would be the arrangements, or, you know, do we know the times of the day we eat, or the seasons? You know, and all these different things. So if being, you know, a natural food freak is important to us, why not bring it into Krishna consciousness instead of just harassing oneself and one's family? You know, use it for Krishna. That's why Krishna gave the Ayurveda. It's for people who health is one of their important focuses, then you can engage that in Krishna's service. That's why it's there. If somebody then, you know, the auspicious times and omens is important for them, then Krishna's given Jyotish. If ritual is important for you, then cult is there. If morality and social interaction is important, he's given Dharma Shastra. If economics is Artha Shastra. You know, if music and other, you know, the fine and performing arts, then he's given the Gandharva Veda, the Silva Sutras, and all these different things. You know, if warfare is, he's given the Dhamma Veda. So whatever's, if language, you got Sanskrit. You know, so whatever's important to you, that's not the problem. It's just try to find this proper connection. Yukta Vairagya is there, we use it. We can use the modern, but we have to know that when it comes in conflict with the Vedas, then it's actually going against our devotional development.
I'm just putting in my mind of thought what you were saying about the source of all the chemicals, the divine self. It's like Mahavishnu is my thing in the whole universe, and everything is produced and manifest by his energy. The same Mahavishnu is in the heart. He is not limited, which is the facilities to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the more dependent on him is, everything works perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we just depend. That's the thing, if one just eats. It's just like Kava mentions in the Gita that the blood moves by the chitta because it goes through there. Where the super soul and the soul and that is, it gets power. Then it's taken throughout the body. So actually our energy comes from the blood going by the place where the Lord, the soul, and the life air stay. That's actually the source of energy. You know? And then the bulk of the body and that comes from eating. Like when you eat, what's on your tongue is what gives you energy. What you swallow develops the body. The energy comes by when you're chewing it. So that's why people who have to eat so much, much of the time they don't chew and taste what they eat. Well, those who take, like you see ladies eat less, you know, much of the time, at least, because they taste, they get into it. So they get more energy out of less.
It says 70% is food for the mind.
70%
is for the muscle.
Yeah.
The muscle.
Yeah.
So the breaking up and
the
prana is
they had a lack of vitamin B12, but... Okay, so you're saying that the devotees have a lack of vitamin B12. And so were they eating the proper, you know, diet that's given by the scriptures? Okay, so now B12, where do you get it? You get it from liver, and you get it from peanuts. Yeah. Okay, so if you didn't know, then why are you talking? So this normal source, according to the modern dietitians, is you can only get it from non-vegetarian subjects. Therefore, if you're a vegetarian, you will die. Interesting to note that before the Mughals came into India, basically most everybody was vegetarian. You know, and so somehow or another, this whole culture was going on without the modern B12. So the point is they will see what's in the system. They don't know how it gets there. There's no discussion in nutrition that in the process of digestion, vitamins and minerals are produced. Like now, it was vitamin K. How did people survive in the 50s and 60s without vitamin K? They only figured it out in the 90s. So, you know, were they walking dead men? Or how did they live, you know? And before, I think it was in the 40s, that they figured out vitamins. So how did people live before that? These big burly guys who could go out and, you know, work in the field all day and night. And, you know, how did they do it without their vitamin, you know, all that? You know what I'm saying? So the modern nutritionist says you need vitamin B12 based on what? And where did it come from? Okay, you got it in the liver. How did it get in the liver? It's in the liver, but how is it in the liver? Right? You know, you're not taking vitamin B12 and pushing it into your side. So, I mean, how did it get there? Right? If it's only a liver, then fish aren't eating liver. The cow's liver that you're eating to get your B12 only ate grass its whole life. You know what I'm saying? And now let us say, we have a scenario. You got a dark alley, right? And you're going to bump into, you know, a 6 foot, you know, 200 pound, you know, meat eating nasty guy, or a 1500 pound bull who only eats grass. Which of the two would you rather bump into? Of course, neither, but if you had your choice, you'd probably take the meat eater. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the problem with the system, is it sounds good. The mind is very simple because it accepts and rejects. So if you say something that kind of connects with something of your attachment, the mind goes, yes, immediately. It doesn't necessarily mean it's right. You know, it's just the way the mind works. It's very funny like that. So because of this, you have to be careful that there's certain things that are there. Okay, from the modern diets, then we can understand you have to be careful about your diet. But do we eat spinach? Right? Is spinach a regular thing that's eaten, even by the Western nutritionists? It's not part of your Western meal. They'll eat salad, but salad doesn't have the same thing in it that spinach does. Are they eating spinach salad? No. Occasionally you might. But in the Bengali, spinach is part of the everyday meal. Every day you eat spinach. The Chinese, they won't have a meal without spinach. Every day they eat spinach. Guaranteed. They'll eat rice and spinach. If it's the simplest of simple meal, it'll be rice and spinach. And if it's more, they'll add another vegetable or add another thing, or add a soup. But there's no question it will be rice and spinach. Right? Because spinach, then, according to that, carries, how do you say, multitudes of more protein and minerals in that than non-vegetarian stuff carries. You know, B vitamins come from grains, like that. Then there's the thing, well, sugar burns up B vitamins, but, you know, everything burns up something. You drive your car, it burns up petrol. Ooh, you know, so therefore we shouldn't drive the car because it burns up the petrol. You know, petrol, we should just keep the car sitting there and the petrol in the tank, and then the petrol's like, that's what the B vitamins are for, stupid. It's for breaking down sugar, because that's what your body runs on. Your body doesn't run on protein, it runs on sugar. So that means all the grains that have, and the interesting thing is the grain, take the wheat or the rice, they're the ones that have the B vitamins in it. They're the ones when the body breaks it down, it turns it into glucose, sugar. Put two and two together, yeah. So that's why they go together. Yeah, it's in everything. It's very rare you can't find. Maybe in watercress, okay, maybe you can avoid the sugar. You know, so the whole point is the science has something, but if it was so good, why does it keep changing? Right? In the 60s, you had to take 40 grams of protein or you'd die. Right? Then in the 80s, they figured out it was 20 grams of protein. Now they're thinking it's even less, and they're thinking protein's not the main thing, it's the sugars. You know? And now, you know, now you're going to do about the, you know, the sugar blues. You know? So the point is if you take a proper, balanced diet, there's no problem. But you have to know what is proper and balanced. If you don't know, what Westerners know what a real diet is? Have no idea. They have any idea what order you can eat things in, that it won't kill you? They don't know. So they work out things that basically get a result, but they don't know what they're talking about. Right? Westerner has no idea about how to mix foods. Right? So then that's the whole thing. They don't know. So therefore, then they'll say you only eat things one at a time, or this or that, or something. Because if you don't know, then better you think. So, but if you know the science of how it works, then what's the problem? Yeah.
He had a lot of problems. He needed to do some diets. If he was following different diets, then he comes to problems. See the problem? These diets are bogus. And no, you are bogus.
Yeah. Are you following all these diets? Yeah. So one of the top American nutritionists, then they, in studying all the different diets of the world, concluded that the village Indian diet is the best diet on the planet. Like that. So it's kind of like, you know, come back and that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted the Indians to go to the West. Because if they go to the West and you convert the Westerners, then the Westerners come to India. Right? You understand? That's the whole point. If the Westerners say it's good, then the Indians go, yes. So in the same way as when the Westerners say this diet is good, oh, just see here, you know, then, you know, taking this diet that Prabhupada gave us then is approved by the, you know, the national, what is it, the American, whatever it is, of health, you know, the FDA, no, that's drugs, or whatever it is, one of those guys, you know. Like that. So then, hey, it's good, then I have faith in it. It's the same principle. So that's the whole point, is that you eat this balanced diet, they'll also say, the dal and the rice, they balance each other. The chapatis and the vegetables, the vegetables, they all have the things, they go together. How you eat it in the Indian diet is the way it goes, the way it works. But you still have to eat it like the Indians eat it. You know, you take your rice, put it in the chapati, roll it up, eat it with one hand, and drink your dal and eat the sabji with a spoon. then you won't get the benefits. Then you're saying, hey, but they ate it, but they didn't eat it. Because your stomach is not a washing machine. It just mixes it all up. How you eat it is how it sits in there and how it's digested. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. If you eat the sabji on its own, and then afterwards you eat the chapatis on its own, it sits like that in your stomach. So except at the spot where it touched, that spot you'll get both. That's why you eat the chapati with the sabji. Or the rice with the sabji or with the dal. Because they go together. Right? And I've seen, you're saying that all devotees eat, but in the West, I don't see any. I've sat down at many a table. I have yet to see a devotee eat a meal like you would in India, anywhere other than those who grew up in India from the very beginning. Even those who come to India now still eat like Westerners. So the fault's not the diet, just like you said. It's not that the diet's bogus, that you're bogus. So the devotees are going to eat well. It's not India or anything else. It's or the diet. It's just they don't know how to eat. Like that. Yeah, yeah. No, that's just. Yeah. Yeah.
They also are trying to break down sleeping.
Sleeping.
Make money.
Oh, okay. Sleeping. Okay. Put on one of those funny little masks and that. Okay. That only works where it's very, very cold. Okay, so, yeah. Setting an example. He is setting an example on how an abhut isn't disturbed by criticism or glorification. And he's not attached to anything. He has no need to gain. So he's setting a very good example. You know, maybe you can't learn from him how to put on your dhoti next week. Something like that. But, you know, there's other people you can learn that from. Okay?
Okay. We had actually an in-depth question about Rajamakrishna, because we got in Bhakti Shastri questions or essay, how Rajamakrishna can assist. I don't know if it's proper.
How Varnashram can assist.
Bhakti Yoga or ISKCON.
Means you're in the material world, so you're going to have to connect something to. You have to use something, right? So then, and the devotional process is interactive with other people, right? So then Varnashram tells a very scientific way that you can scientifically, or a very effective way, interact with others. That the most greatest benefit is gotten on all levels. Does that make sense? So that's its position. Because it itself is not devotional service. But because it is the reflection of the original culture of those who are fully absorbed in devotional service. Therefore, it becomes a very useful medium for engaging in devotional service. Like Arjuna used being a Kshatriya in Krishna's service. That's your Bhagavad Gita. Like that. The gopis used being girls in Krishna's service. Mother Yashoda engaged being a mother. Right? The cowherd boys engaged being friends. Does that make some sense? Like that. Or so whatever it is, then it's a very high quality medium to be used in the Lord's service. But because it's refined, it takes a little bit of understanding. The principles are very easy, but because it's so refined, then the details should only be gone into if you can always keep them connected to the principle. If at any point detail becomes disassociated with the principle, that's as far as you should go. You should stick it wherever you can run the principle. Right? Like a Brahmin should study and teach. That's the essential point of a Brahmin. Now anything else in Brahminical culture that's there, you can connect to that, then it's a value. But if you don't, then you miss the point. Right? Because a real Brahmin is a devotee. Does that make sense? That's the whole point.
What is to become? Because sometimes the bodies are maybe more so here like Varnasham, they say, Bhagavad-gita, ultimately this is Sarvada-bharacharya.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of things. This means, for example, if they hold Navadvip surrenders now to this one, but nobody surrenders now, again, they have to be engaged more into the true practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like even in the Abhana, still they have to be engaged in something.
Mm-hmm.
It's again
Marcus. Yeah. Yeah. See, the approach on this is the important thing. Is give up all religions to surrender to Krishna. So that is the point that you're only doing it because it's nice for Krishna. That's the consideration. You're not doing it, see, generally Varnashram is seen as because it's the right thing to do, it's the moral thing, it's the good thing, it's the religious thing. But that's not the devotee's consideration. The devotee's consideration, it is useful in Krishna's service, therefore it's valuable. Therefore parts of Varnashram that are not like Shraddha rites are not important for devotional service, so we don't do them. Does that make sense? So that's not there. You know, it's not necessary. The Shraddha Yagyas are not necessary. We already have the process of Harinam Sankirtan. Because even the Dharma Shastra says that Kali Yuga, the prominent quality, or its feature through which you gain is through liberality. Right? And so the greatest welfare work is Harinam Sankirtan. So that's for this age. Right? Dwapara is cleanliness, because their system is deity worship, so the cleanliness is theirs. You know, in the Dwapara, I mean the Treta, it's knowledge. So with that knowledge, they perform the yagyas. But in the Satya, then it's austerity. So liberality is the quality in this age. So to be able to distribute the Lord's name from qualities and pastimes, that's the best thing you can do. Does that make sense? So in doing that, then we can use Varnashram. Does that make sense? So in other words, we're going to serve Krishna. What are we going to serve him with? Okay, I have these qualities and these facilities, so then Varnashram explains how to nicely engage those, so then I use it. You know what I'm saying? Arjuna surrendered to Krishna as his servant. Then as his servant, he's acting as a Kshatriya fighter. Up to that point, he's a Kshatriya who's trying to become God conscious. Right? He's acting as a neophyte in the first chapter. Then the knowledge is given. Then we get after all that, that brings one to the Madhuma platform, where, okay, I'm a Kshatriya, so therefore how to, do without attachment and proper knowledge, like that, and connect myself in this way to Krishna. But then at the end, then as you give up all that I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not this, I'm not that, I am servant of Krishna. As servant of Krishna, then I will engage whatever's my natural propensities in his service. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the point of the indifference. It doesn't matter what it is. Like that. I'm a man, I use that in Krishna service. I'm a woman, I use that in Krishna service. It doesn't, because if we're indifferent, it doesn't matter. Because to Krishna, it doesn't matter. It's the devotion. You have to use some medium. Right? Whether you cook a cauliflower 74 or you cook a cabbage 74, it doesn't matter to Krishna. It's the devotion which is cooked. That's the whole point. He's going to eat the devotion. He's not. It's not the vegetable. His own exercise. So that's the point. So to him, it doesn't matter what form you're in. Then it's nice. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the position. You know. Because it's the mood. The gopis then are in the higher rasa then, you know, because the men aren't going to be in the conjugal rasa, so they're in the, can be in the parental or in the friendship. Right? But the intimate cowherd boyfriends, like Madhu Mangal, they can taste the same, their realization is as high as the general gopis. Right? They come to that platform of that Mahabharata, but only them.
They know the intimacy.
Yeah. But they can't taste farther, deeper aspects of the Mahabharata, right? Because there's so many levels of it. They can't go farther than that. They can go on the edge of it. So that means then he's better than so many of the other ladies who are not in that. So I'm saying, so it's the devotion that's important. That's the ultimate. That's the whole point that's trying to be getting across. Because then, okay, it's devotion is important. How do I express it? Then you have forms. Therefore, you have the process of varna ashram and the scriptures described, because you have the form which you use. So all these things are actually the sambandha. Does that make sense? All these facilities, sambandha, that are relationships that you can then, therefore, engage in Krishna's service for his satisfaction. Does that make sense? So there, in that way, then varnashram, if it's connected to Krishna, is very useful. If it's not connected to Krishna, then it's nice. It makes the world run a little more peacefully, but people still stay in the material world. They're not going to go back to God there. Does that make sense?
What was actually Prabhupada's idea? Did he want to use varnashram as a preaching tool or something like he was emphasizing? So much in the last.
Did Prabhupada want to use varnashram as a preaching tool? Means it's always a preaching tool. But the point is the tool is lived. We have to remember it's like this. Is distributing books a preaching tool? Yes. Okay. But if you only distribute books, can you say that you're a perfect book distributor? No. Prabhupada wanted that those who read the books and are convinced, they're distributing the books on that conviction. This book is so important and valuable, it has changed my life. I would like to perform the welfare activities of helping other people gain entrance into this by taking this book home and reading it. Right? That's book distribution. So the varnashram is a tool, but the valuable aspects of it that we're engaging in his service, those are to be valued and lived. Right? This external show is great for the, you know, down on the corner, you know, driving a 57 Chevy around and picking up girls. But when it gets down to real life, then it has to go, it has to have some substance. So the point is Prabhupada wanted the society to create Brahmins. Because Brahmins will create the rest of society. If you have Brahmins, you can have varnashram. Because even if you don't have anybody else, you just have Brahmins. Satyuga is just Brahmins. Like that. Treta Yuga, then you have the Kshatriyas and everything else coming. Because before they're all Hamsas, so that means they're all Brahmins. So you can run the Varnashram system just with Brahmins. Right? Because before, you look at it, Brahmins had all four of the ashrams. When Prabhupada was here, you had Brahmacharyas, you had Grihasthas, you had Vanaprasthas, you had Sannyas, you had Brahmins. Right? So But because devotees weren't able to fully engage all their needs, there was too much material identification. Therefore, you have to introduce Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. Right? Does that make sense? So Varnashram, in its essential state, was already established in Prabhupada's here. Because even of that, the most essential is Vaishnava. Because the Vaishnava is the real Brahman. But he also gave the form of it, the cleanliness, the dress, all these different things. The lifestyle, the activities, the occupation. Devotees maintain themselves as being Brahmins. The temple devotees maintain themselves as being Brahmins. Does that make sense? Okay. So, it is useful. Prabhupada acted as a sannyasi. Lord Chaitanya acted as a sannyasi. Lord Chaitanya's occupation was as a sannyas. Why did he get fed? Because he's a sannyasi. Does that make sense? So, it's used. You have to have a social system. Point is the soul, the conditioned soul, cannot function without religion. No way they can function. So you either follow that which is given by authority, or you'll make it up yourself. You know what I'm saying? That's the way it is. You go down to, you know, some club or some group or some gang on the street. They have their religion. They have their whole social function, how they greet each other, what language they use, how they say goodbye, you know, what are their duties, who does what, their whole hierarchy, how they make their money, everything. It's a complete little religion. But it's all speculative. So you either follow God's or you make your own. Guaranteed. But it's not. If you really want to analyze and take anything that anybody's doing and breaking it down into its religious components. If you know what religion is. Religion means the nature that you can't change. Then that you're going to have some things like, the point is you can't change the false ego. You can purify it, but you can't change it. There's got to be an identity. Therefore, I am of this club. You're not going to change that. Right? And then you're going to have your prestige, so therefore who's in charge and who's on the top, who's on the bottom. You know, you're going to do these things you can't change. So modern man thinks he's changing it and changing the world, but he's not changing anything. Like that, because they don't know what they're dealing with. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, here, okay, I get rid of this sugar or that sugar. You know, it's just like this. It's the devotee won't take sucrose, which is your regular sugar, because of, you know, the breakdown and destruction of the B vitamins and all this and that. But they'll take honey. But honey, except for when it's taken in the winter months, creates such heat in the body, it creates intense lust. But they don't know. Yeah, so there's so many things. Each has its advantage and disadvantage. You can't get it. The idea is that one is thinking, I'm going to get 100%. There's no question that you're ever going to get 100%. You can't. It's a material world. You have to compromise. You cannot get 100%. You know, there's no such thing as, what is the 100% diet? You know? Okay, you make your popcorn. Okay, that's corn, right? So then that's, you know, and you made it with safflower oil because that's the most polyunsaturated oil. Okay, of course, safflower is forbidden by the Vedic culture. In the Vedas, they won't use it because it creates such odors and stuff in the body. The body's considered impure, but you're healthy. And then on top of that, then you're going to put your brewer's yeast, right? Because protein and all that, that nobody knows that brewer's yeast, not baker's yeast, brewer's yeast. Brewer's yeast means the brewer made beer And after the beer is finished, then you get this slag at the bottom of the brewer, at the place where you made the beer. That is then dried and powdered, and that's called brewer's yeast. So, in other words, the slag from the beer is what you're sprinkling on your popcorn. Now it's called nutritional yeast instead of brewer's yeast. Like that. Whatever, if you need to take it, whatever, that's another thing. But, you know, hey, you know, let's, you know. And then, you know, then on top of that, but then more powerful than that is your spirulina. I mean, that's complete food, so you should be sprinkling that also on there. And then you have your, what do you call it, the whey powder. I mean, that's got everything in it that the milk needs, but without all the difficulties of the milk and the digestion. You sprinkle that on there, you know. And, try to eat it. So in other words, what a nutritionalist said is good for you is inedible. And unfortunately, what tastes good is not good for you. So you got to find a compromise somewhere. Of course, you can get to like, but it's not because the taste bud's there. It's because the mind accepts, oh, this is healthy, so it tastes good. It doesn't taste good. The mind accepts. Because if it tasted good, Krishna would be eating it. That's for sure. If it tasted good, Mother Yashoda would be making it for Krishna. That's what she'd be doing. You know? But instead, you know, it's out there, you know, you gotta be a, you know, whales eat spirulina. You know, that's what they eat. Huh?
Raw diet.
Oh, raw diet. Yeah, raw diet, that's for bulls, right?
They have a setup.
You can't, because raw diet means clears the system out. It's good for both. It clears the system out, but then your system is open towards infection. Like that. Because Ayurveda is very careful on these things. Because more than 2 or 3 weeks, then you leave yourself open. And it can only work actually for Pitta constitution. Pitta constitution is the only constitution that can in any way come close to digesting salad. If you're Vata Kapha, you're not digesting it. Never joke, never fool yourself. It means when you bite it and the juice that you got out of it, that's all you're getting. But everything else, have it went in, it'll come out exactly. Because our system cannot digest cellulose. It cannot. Cows, yes. Their system's meant to break down cellulose. You know, cows, horses, their system's like that. It breaks it down. They have a system. We can't. So it's a fallacy that you're getting anything out of your salad other than roughage and other than the bits of juice that you get by chewing. Like that. But more than that, you don't. It's just fill. You know, it just goes in there and pushes everything through and scrapes the walls of it. That's all. It's like, you know, eating a scrub brush. You know, that's what it's for. So that's its benefit. So because it scrubs it, then you get more benefit from the actual food you do eat. But people think it's the salad. No, it's not. The salad just clears it out, and it's the food that you eat that you get the benefit from. But because these things aren't known, people can't be told that. Otherwise they would know, I'll eat the salad for that. When I'm feeling too much like this, I'll eat salad, clear things out. Then I'll eat a regular diet. But otherwise, there's so many things they don't know about. Because the materialists can't fast for so long, there are a few people, crazy people do it. But then they don't know the effects. But the Ayurveda knows the effects. Even you do this thing, you just take the salt water and clear yourself out, you have to immediately afterwards eat some very light, rich food. Not light food, rich.
Greasy.
It has to be greasy, otherwise you've cleared out all the oil out of your intestines, and unless some oil is in there, you can get infections. So that's not known. So that's why you have people, one person does it, it's great, and the next person does it, almost kills them. Why? Because they don't know what's going on. They don't know the constitutions, they don't know the results. So that's the whole thing, is one has to know the Vedic science. Yes?
The statement you made about
Sounds Okay, what you're saying is that if it's just the Brahmins, the variety of exchange. Okay, so how often have you been exchanging with, you know, the rickshaw wala or the guy in the shop selling you the, you know, crackers? Or, you know what I'm saying? Point is, it's interaction is coming between individuals. So the form goes with what we're mentioning there is since everybody is dealing in awe and reverence, so the same form can function. But because in Goloka, there's the variety of the rasas, you have to have a different body, right? You have to have a body that looks like a mother's body to be in the motherly rasa. You have to have a body that looks like a young girl to be in the conjugal rasa. You have to have a body that looks like a very fit and healthy boy to be in the friendship rasa. Does that make sense? You have to have a body that looks like a cow, you know, or a tree, or a blade of grass to be in the shanta rasa. Does that make sense? So that's why the variety is there, because of that aspect. Vaikuntha, then it's not, so it's a different thing. But within that, it's not that the devotees of Vaikuntha don't have a nice exchange with each other and their rasa and their interaction of serving the Lord. But what I'm saying, you don't need variety of form. But there is a lot of variety of form. Because Gopakumar is explaining while he's watching there at the gate and people are coming in and all animal forms and this and that, and because they're coming from all over. So that's there. But my point is that if you have a lot of people with Sarupi where everybody looks exactly the same, it doesn't matter because the rasa is on reverence. But in the Krishna Lila, then one Uddhava looking exactly the same adds. But if everybody looked like Uddhava, then it would kind of, it wouldn't have any meaning. You know, the gopis are there in separation and they all look like Krishna, and then somebody walks in and looks like Krishna. Oh, here's someone who looks like Krishna. Says, you know, yeah, that's, they also look like Krishna.
I would like to say, when seeing the practice of the devotees, it's called the Mahatma, but
okay, so it doesn't seem practical for those who are going to go look to have Varnashram that only has Brahmas. The point is the relationships here aren't the relationships there. We're trying to wind up the relationships here to get to there. It means one has attachment for family life, therefore one has relationship with family members, but only for the purpose that one will wind that up and lose that need. Right? Because one thinks, okay, husband and wife relationships are the cat's meow. Okay, then, so unless one engages in it and sees it's not, then one's convinced. And because it's so complex, then there's unlimited aspects. Well, if I said this word instead of that word, every word and thing would have gone fine. Or that word was fine, but if I said it in this tone of voice or that tone of voice, then it would have been fine. Or the word in the tone was fine, but if I just left this little bit of a pause like that, then it would have been fine. But, you know, so you have, that's why you have so many years to work it out, so you can try all those things over and this way, that way, and try making it this way, and then you finally figure out that this doesn't work. And then you go, okay, Krishna, hurry up. That's the whole point. That's why the higher it up it is, the more complex. That's why it's more, it includes the other. Shantarasa is simple. Then servitorship has that plus more. Friendship has those three. So conjugal has everything in it. Everything's in there. Because it just say no, but they, it's just a matter, but it's in its pure state.
We do the best thing.
So it's there, but it works nicely. So the point is what we're saying is you can start from there, and from that you can create it, the rest of it. Because you're going to need the rest of it. You're going to have administrators. You're going to have business people. Otherwise, where's the money to run it? But even if they're not in the temples, it doesn't matter. They can be outside. You know what I'm saying? It's just that it's there somewhere.
Maybe the explanation of why so many Brahmanas in Satyayuga, because the other leads were not there.
They all lived in the forest. That's the main point. They lived in the forest, but in Treta Yuga, then they started living in the cities. You know, so then you have to end the whole hierarchy. Because forest life is very simple, but the urban life is more complex. Even rural life is more complex.
They were also called the Mangal.
Yeah, they all have Mangal.
There's an interesting detail in the market day where I say, Satyayuga is a competition for supplying new
things to people. Yeah. Also, probably mosquitoes are more respected. Shulaparupa, I think. Salavita, Bhakti Vindaki. Chaitanya Tagore, the Pleiadam.